There's a sound that happens in the first 8 bars of this recording that doesn't belong to any single instrument. It's something that exists between the muted trumpet, the low register clarinet, and that growling trombone. It's a ghost note, a phantom fourth voice, the microphone caught almost by accident in New York's studio in October of 1930. Duke Ellington called it a mic tone. He meant it as a technical curiosity, but what he created was one of the most famous standards of all times. Years since the first recording, this song has been covered by Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, Nina Simone, Charles Mingus, Thelonious Monk, Louis Armstrong, Tony Bennett, and hundreds of others. It charted in the pop top 3 in 1931. It was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 1975. NPR named it as one of the 100 most important songs in American music history in the year 2000. Photocopied jazz Bible that sits on music stands of jazz musicians for half a century. It's one of the first Ellington charts anyone learns. And yet, most people can't tell you who actually wrote it, or who wrote the lyrics, or why New Orleans teacher named Lorenzo Tio, who recorded almost nothing, and whose name appears in almost no history books, deserves credit for one of the most beloved melodic phrases. Over the next 45 minutes, we're going to peel back the layers of this song. From New Orleans courtyard to a Harlem radio broadcast, from a $25 copyright buyout that cheated a clarinetist out of royalties for 30 years, to the moment Thelonious Monk sat down with a mountain of Ellington sheet music and figured out what to do with this tune in a New Jersey living room. It's October 1930. America is 1 year into the Great Depression. In Harlem, a different kind of economy is thriving. The Cotton Club sits on the corner of 142nd Street and Lenox Avenue, Harlem's most expensive and, by design, most segregated nightclub. White socialites ride the subway uptown in tuxedos to watch black musicians perform on a bandstand designed to look like a southern plantation mansion. The waiters wear red tuxedos meant to evoke antebellum butlers. The performers enter through the back door. The audience sits at tables they can barely afford. And every few nights, the music from this performance, Duke Ellington's orchestra, live, is broadcast nationally on NBC Radio. Ellington began his residency at the Cotton Club in 1927, receiving national and international exposure through radio and building a recording career through the 78 RPM format. He was not simply a bandleader. He was America's most important composer, operating inside a cage built by someone else's racism, using every available tool, the radio microphone, the recording studio, the arrangement of the instruments on a bandstand, to do something those who built the cage hadn't anticipated. He was creating art. The real story begins not in Harlem, but in New Orleans. The genesis of the song was a visit to New York City in 1930 by New Orleans jazz man called Lorenzo Tio Jr. Duke Ellington's clarinetist, Bonnie Bigard, was a former student of Tio's. On Tio's visit to New York, he shared with Bigard a number of melodies he'd written, including one called Dreamy Blues, which had served as the theme song for his group back home, Armin Pippin's New Orleans Orchestra. Lorenzo Tio Jr., the name doesn't appear in most jazz histories, but he's one of the most important clarinet teachers New Orleans ever produced. A Creole musician from a dynasty of music teachers who trained an entire generation of jazzmen in the city's back parlors and front porches. His student, Barney Bigard, born Albury Liam Bigard, March 3, 1906, to a Creole family in New Orleans, would carry that New Orleans sound all the way to the Cotton Club. Bigard later recalled, "I asked him if I could borrow it. I took it home and kept fooling around with it and got something together that was mostly my own, but partly Tio's. That variation would become the clarinet solo in the B section of Mood Indigo, one of the most recognizable instrumental phrases in jazz." That's the sound of Lorenzo Tio Jr. on the clarinet and the alto saxophone with a tune called High Society from the 2nd of July of 1929. You hear him there with Eddie Allen on the cornet, Clarence Williams on the piano, Floyd Casey on the washboard. Ellington took Bigard's melody, composed an entirely new piece on top of it, and brought it to a radio broadcast at the Cotton Club in the fall of 1930, still titled Dreamy Blues. The next morning, mail poured in from fans raving about the new tune. Irving Mills, Ellington's manager and publishing partner, put lyric to it and renamed it Mood Indigo. Then came the arrangement. And this is where everything changes. Voicing of the horns would be the clarinet at the top, trumpet in the middle, and trombone at the bottom. In Mood Indigo, Ellington's voices the trombone right on top of the instrument's register and the clarinet at its very lowest. That was unheard of at the time. Composer and jazz educator David Baker explains, "Sometimes to create surprise, he would take that sound that you expect to be that instrument and put it in another instrument, and that's where the genius and magic comes." The inversion created something acoustically impossible to explain and immediately viscerally moving to hear. It created the in-studio called mixed tone, an effect generated by the overtones of the clarinet and the trombone, giving the audio illusion of the presence of a fourth voice or instrument, a phantom presence, a ghost in the machine. The Dean of Jazz Historians, Dan Morgenstern, described this performance of Mood Indigo as having a wonderfully evocative 3 in the morning sound. That's it exactly. 3 in the morning. The lights are low, somewhere between sleep and grief. Kennedy Ellington was born on April 29, 1899 in Washington, D.C., into a middle-class black family that gave him piano lessons at age 7 and apparently called him Duke because of his gentlemanly bearing before he was even old enough to have earned the title. By 14, his exposure to ragtime music drew him to jazz and ignited a desire to become a professional musician. His first composition, Soda Fountain Rag, was inspired by his job as a soda clerk. He was turned down from an art scholarship at the Pratt Institute in Brooklyn and followed jazz instead, a decision that would shape American culture for the next 6 decades. Ellington wrote or collaborated on more than 1,000 compositions. His extensive body of work is the largest recorded personal jazz legacy, and many of his pieces have become standards. Think about what that catalog contains. It Don't Mean a Thing, Sophisticated Lady, Satin Doll, Prelude to a Kiss, Caravan, In a Mellow Tone, Take the A Train, East St. Louis Toodaloo, Black and Tan Fantasy, and In My Solitude. These are not simply popular songs. They are miniature tone poems. Each one is built around a specific emotional texture, not a key, not a time signature, but a feeling that Ellington named and then constructed brick by brick around the individual voices of his musicians. Another thing about Ellington that makes him singular in jazz history, he selected his musicians for their expressive individuality. Several members of his ensemble, including trumpeter Cootie Williams, trombonist Lawrence Brown, baritone saxophonist Harry Carney, alto saxophonist Johnny Hodges, and clarinetist Barney Bigard, were themselves important jazz artists. He didn't write for the saxophone section. He wrote for Johnny Hodges' creamy gliding tone, for Bigard's smoky New Orleans Chalumeau register. The lyricist Irvin Drake would later refer to Ellington's orchestra as a kind of musical kibbutz, an environment in which all ideas are welcomed and collaboration was the rule rather than the exception. The Cotton Club years, 1927 to 1931, were the crucible. The club enabled Ellington to develop his repertoire while composing dance tunes, overtures, transitions, and jungle effects, giving him freedom to experiment with orchestral arrangements that touring bands rarely experienced. Ellington recorded more than 100 compositions during this period. You heard Johnny Hodges playing Passion Flower, Tricky Sam Nanton from Black and Tan Fantasy, and Bubba Miley from Blues with a Feeling. If you want to hear the complete versions of those songs, you just have to go to www.the-standard-show.com, where every week I'll post all of the reference videos from the show and all of the information as well as the charts, so you can follow along with the changes as you listen. You are listening to The Standard Show on Big E Radio from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. All of that. The Harlem Renaissance swirling outside, the plantation-themed bandstand inside, the radio microphone beaming his music across the country, all of this is in Mood Indigo. The melancholy, the restraint, the deliberate inversion of expectation, the blues expressed not through volume and swagger, but through a three-in-the-morning whisper. As writer and jazz historian Will Friedwald puts it, he kept them fresh by constantly rewriting them, by finding new ways to play them. Every few years or so, he would come up with a new arrangement of Mood Indigo. So you never did sound like they were just kind of running through it, a hackneyed thing. He would always keep it fresh and lively and musically valid. Ellington died May 24th of 1974, weeks after his 75th birthday. He was working right until the end. He never stopped.
Evening when lights are low. 'cause there's nobody who cares about me. I'm just a soul who's bluer than blue can be. When I get that mood indigo, I could lay me down and die. You
Ella Fitzgerald herself, her version of Moody Go from 1957. She won a Grammy for that performance, and it is so well deserved. Let's talk about the lyrics, because the story of who wrote the words to Moody Go is one of the more quietly scandalous tales in jazz publishing history. The words are credited to Irving Mills. Irving Mills, for those unfamiliar, was Ellington's manager and publishing partner, the man who had a habit of attaching his name to Ellington's compositions in exchange for getting them published and distributed. Mills regularly took a co-composer credit. From the beginning of their relationship, he arranged recording sessions on nearly every label. He was, by any honest accounting, a businessman who understood that the way to make money from jazz in 1930 was to own a piece of the songs. The substantial royalties for Mood Indigo from 1930 to 1958 flowed to Irving Mills and Duke Ellington. Mills purchased Begard's share of the copyright for Mood Indigo for $25. Begard collected no royalties on the song from 1930 until 1959, when he recaptured his composer interest when the copyright was renewed. $25 for one of the most recorded songs of the 20th century. Now the lyrics. In a 1987 interview, lyricist Mitchell Parrish claimed that he'd written the lyrics, not Mills. Mitchell Parrish, if you know his name, he wrote Stardust, or more precisely, he wrote the words to Hoagie Carmichael's melody that became Stardust, one of the most covered songs in history. He also wrote the lyrics to Deep Purple and Sophisticated Lady. Mitchell Parrish wrote the words to Mood Indigo and received no credit and no royalties for decades. The lyrics themselves are deceptively simple. They are, on the surface, a standard blues lament. A lover gone, an evening full of loneliness. But take a look at what they actually do. The opening is an address. It's not really a confession. You ain't been blue. No, 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 you ain't been blue till you've had that mood indigo. The narrator isn't really describing their own sadness. They're kind of recruiting you into it. They're explaining to you what you think of as sadness is merely a rehearsal for this. Then that feeling goes stealing down in my shoes while I sit and sigh, go long blues. The blues is not obeyed. It's asked to leave and it doesn't. And finally, the closing, which manages to be both completely conventional and genuinely devastating. When I get that mood indigo, I could lay me down and die. That's maybe melodrama, maybe exhaustion. That's the particular loneliness of someone who's run out of ways to fight it. The music says the same thing. The muted trumpet, the low clarinet, the phantom fourth voice. They've all given up fighting too. They're just sitting with it. It is, depending on how you count it, 12 to 16 lines of text. Mitchell Parrish never received normal credit. He never received the royalties. The song made other people very wealthy. Thelonious Monk from 1955 on Riverside Records. By 1955, Thelonious Monk was, in the words of his new producer, Orrin Keepnews, highly regarded but broke. Monk had spent the early 1950s recording for Prestige Records, some of the most important bebop sides ever committed to tape. He'd been present at the founding of bebop. He'd written Round Midnight, Straight No Chaser, While You Needn't, Blue Monk. Critics were starting to understand that he was a genius. The public, though, was not buying the records. The turning point came when Orrin Keepnews Riverside Records bought out Monk's contract from Prestige for a mere $108.24. Keepnews took the challenge of marketing the eccentric Monk head-on, reasoning that listeners stayed away from Monk due to his reputation for difficult music. Keepnews convinced him to record an album of Ellington tunes. As the producer recounts in the liner notes, he retired briefly with a small mountain of Ellington sheet music. In due course, he reported himself ready for action, and thus this LP was born. The recording took place in Rudy Van Gelder's studio in Hackensack, New Jersey, technically Van Gelder's living room, which the engineer converted into one of the finest jazz recording spaces in America. Monk was accompanied by bassist Oscar Pettiford and drummer Kenny Clark. Sessions were held July 21st and 27th of 1955, but think about the pairings for a moment. That's Thelonious Monk, the man who took familiar songs and put them through like a funhouse mirror, who placed notes where they didn't belong and created rhythmic dislocations that made listeners question what they'd heard, playing Duke Ellington, the most sophisticated orchestral composer in jazz history, filtered through the most stubbornly idiosyncratic piano stylist of the bebop era. Monk begins Mood Indigo with an imaginative vamp on the 1-5-6 portion of the tune's famous chorus, underpinned with a syncopated running pattern. He takes the tune more or less straight, but with embellishments at the turns that could have come straight out of Earl Garner.
Just a soul who's bluer than blue can be. when I get that mood, indigo, I could lay me down and die. You ain't been blue. No, 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 no. You ain't never been blue till you've had that mood indigo, that feeling that goes stealing down, way down to my shoes. While I just sit around and sigh, go along.
The specificity of his phrasing, the way he lands on no, 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 with a kind of quiet finality, is the sound of a man who's been there. He's not acting. Frank Sinatra, Mood Indigo, from the Capitol record called The Wee Small Hours, 1955. By 1955, Frank Sinatra had just emerged from the darkest period of his career. The early 50s collapsed his Columbia contract, his failed marriage to Ava Gardner, the years where nobody would book him. Then Capitol Records, Nelson Riddle, and the concept album changed everything. In The Wee Small Hours, 16 songs about heartbreak, all arranged by Nelson Riddle in a palette of blue orchestral velvet. It's one of the great albums in American popular music history. Mood Indigo is track number 2. Riddle's arrangement strips the song almost bare, where Ellington's original is a trio with rhythm. Riddle wraps Sinatra's voice in strings that move like slow fog. Sinatra sings it not as a blues, not with grit or swagger, but as confession. And now for something completely different. From 1955, this is Nina Simone. She broke the mold, she does it her way. How do you take the blues and make it swing with rhythm and dance with sound? You let Nina Simone play it.
Just sit here and sigh, go long blues. I always get that mood indigo since my baby said goodbye. And in the evening when the lights are low, I'm so lonely I could cry. For there's nobody who cares about me, I'm just a poor fool that's bluer than blue can be. When I get that mood indigo, I could lay me down and die.
Debut album Little Girl Blue was recorded in 1957 and then released in 1958 on Bethlehem Records. She was only 24 years old and already playing with a gravity that most musicians spend a lifetime trying to find. Her version of Mood & Go is solo piano and in voice, and it's one of the most intimate recordings she ever made. Indigo twice. The version that you just heard was from November of 1959 with Don Ellis on trumpet, Booker Irvin on the tenor sax, Jimmy Nepper on trombone, John Handy on alto sax, Roland Hanna on piano, and Dammy Richmond on drums. This is the smaller group version. It's an intimate, conversational version with Mingus's bass right up front, playing a direct tribute to Ellington and most certainly to the blues. Mood & Go was written by Barney Bigard and Duke Ellington, first recorded by the Jungle Band in 1930, which you heard at the top of the show. So Mingus covering it carries enormous weight. He briefly played in Ellington's band and idolized Duke. These recordings aren't casual covers. They're acts of devotion and reinvention. Thank you. book was created in the mid-1970s by two students at the Berklee College of Music. In its original form, it was an illegal publication made at local copy shops. It quickly became a standard reference for musicians. Nobody knew exactly who made it. Nobody knew exactly what recordings they used as the sources. It was passed hand to hand, photocopied and re-photocopied, and so the copies were copies of copies. In 2004, the real book material was acquired by Hal Leonard and licensed for legal sale. Many new volumes were eventually added to the series, and some of the errors in the original volumes were corrected. Mood Indigo appears in the real book, Volume 1. It sits in the key of B flat major, which is the standard key for the song. It matches all the Ellington recordings. The form is relatively simple, AABA structure, a 12-bar A section that states the main theme, repeated, a contrasting B section, and the clarinet-derived melody from Bigard Tio, then a return to the A. It's one page. It's accessible. Now, about the errors. The original bootleg real book is famous, notorious, depending on who you ask, for transcription mistakes. Some of them are minor, a wrong chord here, a missed accidental there. Some of them are significant enough to cause a brief moment of confusion at a jam session when two musicians have different editions. The Mood Indigo chart is generally considered one of the more accurately transcribed Ellington charts in the original book, which is either a tribute to the transcriber's care or a reflection of the fact that the song's harmonic language, which is beautiful, is not complex, as is some of Ellington's later work. What the chart doesn't capture, and what no lead sheet can really capture, is the orchestral color that makes the original recording so distinctive. The inverted voicing, the milk tone, the specific timbres of Bigard's Chalumeau register, Nanton's plunger mute, those are in the recording, but not on the page. Every musician who plays from the real book chart is working with just a skeleton. The flesh is in the recordings. The question of what makes a jazz standard as opposed to just a jazz song is one that musicians argue about endlessly. There are thousands of songs that were popular in the 20s and 30s, and nobody plays them anymore. There are songs from the same era that appear in every real book, get called at every jam session, and are covered anew by every generation of musicians. Mood Indigo has been in continuous active service for 95 years. Why? I think it's because of the emotional specificity. Most popular songs in the 30s deal with generalities. Mood Indigo is specific, but universal. It's about sadness, grief, depression, and it's painted in a blue color. Everyone understands it, and it's a feeling you can't shake. It's the one that goes stealing down to your shoes. In 2000, National Public Radio named Mood Indigo to its list of 100 most important recordings in America in the 20th century. In 1975, the year after Ellington's death, it was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame, specifically the 1931 Brunswick recording. There is now a Duke Ellington Circle in Central Park near 110th Street, West 106th Street in Manhattan, was named Duke Ellington Boulevard. And in jazz schools from Tokyo to Toronto, a student pulls out the real books, flips to the M's, and finds a single page of notation, melody, chords, form, and it begins to learn what it means to sit with something beautiful that is so unavoidably sad.
Thank you.
This is Yonathan Avishai. He's a Franco-Israeli jazz pianist, composer, educator, born in Tel Aviv. He moved to France around 2000. He rose to prominence as the co-founder of the band Third World Love alongside Avishai Cohen, double bass player Omer Avital, and drummer Daniel Freeman. He has been a regular collaborator with both Omer Avital and Avishai Cohen, contributing to several of Cohen's ECM recordings. As a leader, his style is marked by minimalism and deep roots in jazz tradition. It's structured around breathing, space, silence, kind of Ahmad Jamali. It's got rhythm and blues, though. He loves the music of the early masters, Armstrong, Jelly Roll, J.P. Johnson, and he thinks that music should be accessible to all people. This comes from an album called Modern Times that was recorded in 2014-2015. Has been a part of the Lincoln Center Orchestra for years and has known Wynton Marsalis since they were in kindergarten together. I really like the spirit of Ellington in this tune, in that trombone and horn section are still playing with the cross voicings of the horns themselves and the textures that can be drawn out of the horns. Thank you. listening to The Standard Show on Biggie Radio from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can send an email to host@the-standard-show.com. You can also go to the website for the real book charts of the tunes that we talk about, plus all the full versions of the music that I've played in the last hour. I'm your host, Joanna Elaine, and I want to thank you for taking a time to take a deep dive into these fabulous tunes. We're going to go out with the original version. That's Duke Ellington with Mood Indigo.